Well, hello again and welcome to Arch Eats. My name is George Mahey.
And I'm Cheryl Bear.
And this week, we're going to be following up on our last episode, the one about vegan restaurants and vegan food. And we're going to interview the reigning OG of local vegan restaurant chefs, a guy by the name of Chris Bertke. And then we'll end up with a micro rant about vegan dishes and vegan menus in restaurants. Let's just say we have a few opinions on those as well.
This episode of Arch Eats is sponsored by Genesis of St. Charles.
But we'll start with what we can't stop thinking about this week. And my thought, coincidentally, dovetails with simple, raw, healthy food. This item is on the menu at Esca, the first of Ben Peremba's five restaurants that he'll be opening in the Del Mar Maker District this year. It's an item that he's most proud of, and it's the most straightforward menu item ever. Ben comes up to me beaming, and he says, "Wait until you taste this." And I look down, and I see a bowl of lightly dressed lettuce and a big hit of grated cheese, and that was it. But Ben was right. Never has such simplicity tasted so good. And there were only three ingredients. The greens were a torn-up mix of lettuces that are grown by a staffer who incidentally owns a company called Vertigreens, which grows lettuce vertically and hydroponically indoors, which means year-round lettuce, even here in St. Louis. Cool company. The greens, they were so beautiful and perfect, they almost look fake. When people say vegetables are different when they're just picked, this salad is what they're talking about. Another component, and maybe the secret component, is the charcoal vinaigrette. Ben takes an ember of hot charcoal, drops it into olive oil, which infuses it with a charred flavor, and uses that as the base for a red wine vinaigrette. It's amazing. The third ingredient is a mountain of grated cheese, specifically Pecorino Sardo, which is a sheep's milk cheese from Sardinia. Ben uses it because he says it's sweeter and more buttery and not as salty as the more common Pecorino Romano. And truth be told, it's Ben's second favorite cheese after Italian Parmesan. But that's it. That's the salad. And I highly recommend it. Hopefully, Ben will smile seeing you smile just like he did with me. So that's what I can't stop thinking about. How about you?
So I'm going a little bit different this week. And I'm not talking about a dish and I'm not talking about a restaurant or anything like that. I am talking about a server. And actually, he wasn't even yet a server. He's a server assistant. So just this past week, I had dinner at Twisted Tree, the really great restaurant out in Sunset Hills.
One of your favorites, I know.
It is one of my favorites. They are so busy and they hit it out of the park every single time. Like, to be able to do that kind of quality, hit temperatures on their steaks, everything's always flawlessly executed.
It's a steakhouse. It's not a cheap place to eat.
It's not.
And it's packed every night of the week.
Yes, but very accessible and approachable. You know, it's just a wonderful place. But I was out there and we had a server assistant. He was so good. We asked his name. His name's Jeremy. Apparently, he's in the process of being promoted to full server. But he was one of those people that, you know, there's good service. And then there are people who have this X factor where they just have this, you know, it's warm yet commanding at the same time. And we were all stopped in our tracks by this young man. He was like watching what maybe Jordan from Louis would have been like when he first started out in the business. I mean, that is how good this kid is.
Did this kid confess that he was a rookie?
He did. He confessed and he said, "I think I finally earned my way up to being a server. We're almost there." So he's great.
It's a great thing to see. And all of a sudden you see somebody that's basically unaffected.
Yes.
They haven't had time to get bad habits. They haven't had time to be jaded. They're fresh in the business. And that happened to me a couple times. And I told, this was, I think, at Olive & Oak. I said, "You're one of the best servers I've ever run into." And she goes, "Thank you very much. It's my first week."
Oh, wow.
And
wow.
It was incredible. Yeah. So that is really refreshing when you find a new face in the business.
It's
like
true.
That.
And I think it also speaks to the fact, you know, you and I have talked about this a lot, that service, we understand that it's important, but I don't think we understand how truly it makes or breaks a restaurant experience. That, you know, you can have great food somewhere, but if you have a subpar service experience, you're going to be left with a bad taste in your mouth. But if you have just kind of so-so food, but like this exceptional service, you're going to walk away feeling really satisfied. And I think that just speaks to the importance that this level of hospitality is.
I think that, you know, we've talked about this. There are people that say, you know, well, we didn't like it. It wasn't very good. And what didn't you like about it exactly? Was it the food? No, the food was fine. It was the service. Yeah. It was the way we were treated. It was the atmosphere. It was something other than food. So again, restaurant people have to keep that in mind. Service is a main component.
Absolutely. So shout out to Jeremy at Twisted Tree. If you're there, ask for him. You will not be disappointed.
We'll be right back.
Just 20 minutes from downtown St. Louis, Missouri's only standalone Genesis dealership is now open. Experience luxury like never before at Genesis of St. Charles, located at 5601 Veterans Memorial Parkway, providing a vast selection of new and luxury used vehicles. The dealership offers competitive prices on every model on the lot. Take a trip to visit their brand new showroom or go to genesisofstcharles.com to discover unparalleled sophistication today.
And now, back to the show.
So that brings us to our guest today. I don't know that he's been a server, but he is a free thinker, and his name is Chris Bertke. He's been a vegan for close to 30 years. He's also one of St. Louis's most essential vegan chefs, thanks to stints at several restaurants, his famous vegan pizzas, and various pop-up events around town, every one of which sold out within a matter of hours. Welcome, sir.
That was awesome. Thank you for the introduction.
Chris, you are our first in-studio guest. You have quite a distinction here.
I hope I do it well.
We're so excited.
We'll see.
Yeah. So that's great.
So, Chris, you've been a vegan most of your life, right? And yeah. I guess my first question is, when did the chef part kick in? When did you start making what I call vegan meats? And you've been doing that a while.
So, not to bore people too much, but, you know, I've been cooking my whole life with, you know, my mom, my grandma, whatever. Obviously not a chef then, not running a kitchen, just my mom bossing me around, telling me, hey, cook this, whatever. My first restaurant gig was actually, I don't know if you heard of it, Bono's Pizzeria.
Sure.
Over in South City. They used to be in
South
the
Hampton.
Little place where, what's the little pastry place over in the old Watson location, right? And there's an Italian restaurant there. But started there making pizzas. You know, I've been cooking forever before that. Went in there starting cooking. So was I a chef? No. And then shortly moved on to a place that you know well, Harvest.
Sure.
Over in Richmond Heights.
You do go way back, don't you?
We do. Wow. But I don't know if you had anything to do with Harvest at that point or not.
This was, I don't know. I don't probably remember. I don't remember you, and I would have.
Yeah, I was there
for the curse words. I would have remembered.
I was there for like the last 3 years that Harvest was open. And I was, you know, I started on the cold line, then moved to saute, did grill here and there, whatever. So was I even a chef then? No, I was just kind of, you know, learning the ropes and everything, learned under a dude, Nick Miller, awesome chef. Steve Gontram, I think, was already gone at that point.
So when did you start calling yourself a chef?
I still wouldn't call myself a chef. I would say, you know, because especially what I'm doing now, you know, to make fun of something else like I do. I'm a sandwich artist at this point. I'm a glorified,
darn good one. Too.
I'm like a glorified Subway because I'm working the line at the deli now, doing. You know, I'm making 100% of the sandwiches. I guess technically, when I was at Utah Station, yeah, I'd call myself a chef. We opened that up. I ran the line, did all that, and then you know, especially when, which we'll probably get to here in a little bit, when Native Foods hired me, called me up out of nowhere. Went up there for a tryout, you know, among like 20 other people throughout the country. And for whatever reason, they hired me. And then I became the executive chef for Native Foods for a few years.
But long before that, you were, you know, a sandwich chef, if you will. But you didn't just pull these things out of the cold table.
Right.
You actually created. And that's the part that fascinates me.
Yeah.
A lot of guys can cook, but not very many people are creating from scratch what they're cooking with. I don't even know how that happened or how it can
happen. So the meats in particular, you know, I toured in punk rock bands for years and years and years and was subject to eat garbage, you know, a Subway garnish sandwich, you know, a bunch of vegetables or whatever. Or Taco Bell, which I hate Taco Bell because they sued me a few times. So I'm not a big fan of them. So I try not to go there anymore. But I would say the first time I ever did anything with seitan, for real with seitan, was at Harvest. We ran a special with it. And I was just kind of like trying to figure it out. And I think it did fairly well. I don't remember. We were looking for a vegan vegetarian special. I think it went pretty well. But then after that, I just got kind of intrigued by the whole thing. Like,
and you started creating
meats. And I just
meats,
started
and I use creating, that in quotes.
Creating quote unquote meats. You know, back in the day, I still drink quite a bit, but not as much as I did back in the day. Back in the day, I would be drinking bottles and bottles of sake or whatever throughout the night at my house with my dogs, hanging out, listening to whatever, you know, music and everything, and just throwing ingredients together and just hoping it worked and see what would happen. And since I do know how meat cooks, how to cook it, how to prepare it, how to do this and that with it, you know, I took those lessons from especially Harvest and brought it to what I was doing late night in my kitchen at the house and just came up with stuff just through, you know, I don't look at recipe books. I try to do as little research as possible so I can come up with something that's like uniquely mine.
When we first met, you had perfected 5 vegan meats and I just thought that was fascinating. And then I started watching you, and then I started writing about you. And then I remember calling you the Pied Piper of vegan chefs because whatever you were doing, people would follow and they would buy and you would sell out all these pop-up events that you did. It was fascinating. And again, testament to you for obviously this stuff worked and there was a market for it.
And I still think it's fascinating. Like I'm shocked, you know, at the deli now we're selling out, you know, we're supposed to be open Wednesday through Saturday, 11 to 6. We shut down almost every day at like 3:30 because we sell out. Numerous reasons because of that. But it's shocking. I still, every day, I'm like, why are these people following me? Why are they like so intrigued by what I'm doing? I think partially, I think I'm cooking pretty good food. I hope. And then the other thing is a lot of people put a front on, you know, and they're not really who they are. I'm kind of who I say I am. You're going to kind of get everything out of me where my, I think you said this once, where my heart on my sleeves.
Yeah. What you see is what you get.
What you see is what you get. And I think people, I think it's kind of a fresh breath for people who, one, either A, don't know who's cooking their food, because I like to kind of be out there and, you know, be like, hey, I'm cooking food. This is what we're doing. I like to talk to people and explain what we're doing. And then B, just, yeah, I think I'm making some pretty kick-ass meats.
Well, and a lot of that started at, I think, at Utah Station. Yeah. And you were very smart where you came on with some different items that everybody could identify with.
Yeah.
That was fascinating to me that you had all these, you know, crack tacos that were
right,
like the Jack in the Box tacos. Yeah.
And that's one thing I kind of wanted to tap into with this a little bit is I think people have really responded to you because back in the day, let's just say when people were starting to, you know, explore vegan cuisine, maybe I think there was like this mystique that it was like this very pretty plant-based, right, you know, all of that. And like this health food, like it was almost like associated with like health food or something. And, you know, there wasn't like necessarily that like craveability or that nostalgia or something. And I'm kind of wondering if, you know, it seems like you definitely tapped into that. Is that something that you have seen evolve over the years, and kind of if you feel like that has been a source of your popularity, is that change?
Yeah, I would say, I don't want to say I started it because I didn't. I'm not that smart, but I think that, you know, when Utah Station started in particular, I wanted to do things that people understood, people knew, and honestly, I didn't really give a crap about what people thought. I wanted to do food that I liked when I was a kid. You know, Big Macs, loved them. Tacos from Jack in the Box, loved them. All that stuff. That was my favorite stuff when I was a kid. God, if I can recreate this, I know there's got to be a ton of other people out there who don't eat meat or trying to be healthier that would want to try it.
And then you brought it around to St. Louis and put out a T-Rav. It was as good as any tea rack.
I remember the day you came into Utah and tried that.
And it was just insanely good. And I wasn't the only one. I mean, tell that story. You had a bit of a problem keeping up with that.
Yes. So I think it may have been the probably the first pop-up I ever did was at the very first Veg Fest in St. Louis. I don't know how many years ago it was because COVID kind of screwed up things and there was a big lag and everything. But the toasted raviolis, you know, who doesn't love a toasted ravioli? We're in St. Louis. How could I not try to recreate that? You know, it's dumb if I didn't. So Veg Fest was coming around, the first Veg Fest. And I think, I don't remember much. My memory isn't that good. I may have done a pop-up with T-Revs before that. I think my first pop-up was on Cherokee. Fortune Teller. I think that was my first pop-up that I ever did. And I know I did the toasted raviolis there. Whether or not Veg Fest was before or after that, whatever. But anyways, Veg Fest. They asked me, you want to do it? I'm like, yeah, I'll do it. So I go, yeah, I'm going to do T-Revs. That's going to be easy. And we get there. We had a line. I don't know how long the line was, but it was actually on the news. Like, hey, here's the longest line. It was just snaking around. Like, people were waiting hours and hours for these stupid toasted raviolis. They caught on huge. And so, you know, we did those at Utah Station for a while. We couldn't even keep up on the demand, so we just cut them off the menu. We couldn't even keep up.
I remember you said, I either have to open a commissary or cut these off the menu.
Exactly. And then COVID happened. So boom, done.
That took care of that.
And then, you know, recently I started selling the toasted raviolis frozen over at the deli. Mm-hmm. We did our first kind of test run because I want to test everything before we go full on into it. And sold out real quick. I don't know how many orders we made. It was a lot, orders. And people just came in. There was a line, people waiting to get toasted raviolis. The key to success in this town, go with things that people find nostalgic for this area, you know, roughly this area, or what we have in this area, and just boom.
Well, this is a proven thing, right, for you.
Yeah.
So will you hire a toasted ravioli guy just to make these 24/7? Because you could.
Well, 24/7, no, I don't have that much money. I wish. But no, we have a couple dudes coming in, friends of mine, one back from way back in Harvest, another dude who works at Peacemaker, and they come in, they do all the pizzas at the deli, back in the kitchen, because here's a good transition. The pizzas are just going crazy, so we couldn't keep up on those. Like, we couldn't do them ourselves. So a buddy of mine's like, hey, you need some help? I'm like, yeah, I need help. And they come in and they make pizzas every week. And toasted raviolis, or this past week, they made crack tacos.
This is all frozen in your case.
Correct. Yeah, we have a frozen case up front. Eventually, we're going to have a deli case. Kind of taking our time getting to that, because my main thing was I want to make sure the sandwiches are good. Because if people come in and our sandwiches suck, nobody's going to come back. So I'm like, let's perfect the sandwiches. I think we kind of got to that point where we're doing really well on the sandwiches. And so we can focus on a couple tiny little offshoots.
It sounds like you may not need a deli case if this frozen product is so successful. I know you sell those frozen pizzas all day long, the T-Ravs, the crack tacos. That might be all you need to do. And again, we're talking about Vegan Deli and Butcher, which is your new restaurant in the shadow of the Bevo Mill. The former Jay's Pizzeria. What else can I say about it?
There was something else there before we got there. It was a crab boil place.
Cluster
Buster or something like that.
Cluster Buster. That's awesome.
Yeah. So it went from like one extreme to another.
Yes.
It was interesting. I thought, you know, I've always called you a rogue chef, a maverick, kind of a wild man. And then you completely turned me on my ear and you took a corporate role with, as you said, native foods. That was like, you're like the least likely person to take a corporate chef job to me. What did you learn from Corporate Chef America?
A couple of things. I'll tell you why I did it. One, I knew I would learn something different. Native foods, for people who don't know, there's still some out there. A fully vegan chain all over Chicago. I think there were five in Chicago, like five in Colorado, mainly the Denver, Boulder area, and then all over California. So there were a number of reasons that I decided to do it. One, I was like, God, this is going to be a great retirement job. It's going to be easy because, you know, I knew what I was walking into. I had to make the menu, come up with ideas, source the food, and go train people. I didn't have to work in the kitchen. I was like, oh my God, this is awesome.
But you were doing this in Chicago. You weren't doing it here, right?
Correct. I went up to Chicago super often, Colorado. I was traveling a lot, which was great. Got to see a lot of cool places, but also kind of wore on me a little bit. But yeah, I was shocked when I took it too. It was just something I wasn't doing anything at the time, and I thought it'd be a good time to do something totally different.
And I don't know that you mentioned this, they were planning on putting a unit in Clayton, which didn't ultimately happen.
Correct. So that was part of the big thing. You know, when they came to me, went up for the tryouts, quote unquote, which I felt like was a tryout, and got chosen, then they brought up to me, like, hey, we're thinking about an open one in St. Louis. I'm like, that's awesome. Hell yeah, I think it'll go well. Make a long story short, the lease was set, everything was done, and then ownership changed. And at that point,
The wheels fell off the wagon.
The wheels fell off the wagon. Myself and the whole executive team didn't like the direction it was moving in. So we all decided to jump ship. And at that point, you know, Native Foods was, you know, the first thing I was told, Native Foods will not be going to St. Louis with the new ownership. And I was like, okay, that's part of the reason that I was kind of really excited about this thing, minus the traveling and, you know, the new experiences. But yeah, we all kind of jumped ship and left.
And yeah. And then that, I guess, opened the door to Vegan Deli and Butcher.
Yeah. And it was funny. So what did I learn from Native Foods? I learned this.
Oh, yeah. That was the original question.
Yes. It took me a minute, too. I kind of veered off track a little bit, too. Supply chain. Learned supply chain incredibly well because, you know, Native Foods was one of the places that made it through the pandemic. And they did it well. They, especially for, you know, a totally vegan place. So I got to learn the supply chain. One thing that I'm not hip on, still don't like doing, is writing recipes. But I learned the whole process on writing recipes and, you know, putting them in, you know, the yields and all of that. That was never my cup of tea. I just did what I did and hoped for the best.
Well, they were taking your recipes and spreading them around Native Foods, so they had to have recipes.
13 different locations, so they had to have them. So I learned a ton, but yeah, I decided to leave. Once new ownership took over, I was actually done with the restaurant industry. I'm like, you know what? I'm going to take it easy, not do anything. And I went down the street. One day, it was awesome outside. There's a small farmer's market down the road from me. And I went down there. I'm like, you know what? I'm going to get me a job. I was pretty, you know, financially set pretty well. And I'm like, I'm just going to get me a part-time job. I'm going to be produce boy. I just wanted to be produce boy. I wanted to work at this farmer's market and just stock produce and be like, hey, what's going on? Talk to all the random people that go to a street side farmer's market. They wouldn't hire me.
What did they, so, did they say why?
No, well, I don't want to say anything about it. Okay. Actually, no one knows where I live, so this is good. So anyway, the woman's super nice. I still go to this produce place. They're getting ready to open up. But she didn't want to hire somebody at my age. And because I was a dude, she's like, you know, normally dudes at your age don't really listen. And she was the owner of the place. She's like, normally dudes your age don't listen to like what I have to say. So I probably won't hire you. And I'm like, well, that's fair. You know, at least she was a straight shooter and told me. I'm like, okay, cool. So I got denied a job working at the produce stand for minimum wage. Whatever.
Wow. What a departure.
I know, right? And so at that point, I'm like, what am I going to do? I got to make some money.
Corporate chef to produce boy. What was the next step?
Next step was wandering around. You know, I'm like, okay, I guess I got to do this. Been wanting to open a deli forever on my own and not work for people. You know, I have a reputation of sometimes getting along with people, sometimes not. And I'm like, you know what? Let's stop that reputation. I'll just work for myself. And my sister lives over in the Holly Hills area. She was into politics there, knew a bunch of people at the Bevo Sid, and introduced me to Alan Boric, who owns the building we're at now, where Jay's Pizzeria used to be. Met him, walked through the place. I'm like, wow, like it was a mess, just trashed.
I thought you said it was the most perfect location ever.
It was.
Lots of crab butter, I can imagine.
I had to have a professional cleaning company come in after I attempted to clean it. To help me clean it. But, you know, I walked in. I'm like, this is perfect. The kitchen was the size of the front of house. The front of house had minimal seating. I didn't plan on having any seating for the place. But I'm like, you know what? This looks awesome. Me and Alan hit it off well, shook hands. Then I just started cleaning up and took about 3 months to get the place up and running, cleaned up, get all the permits and all that garbage.
And you opened in the fall of 23.
I believe like it was like October 31st or November 1st. Yeah.
And just with a couple sandwiches, as I recall.
Well, the friends and family event, we had the full thing, the full menu, like 10. I think it was 10. I think we're up to like 14 now, but it was 10. I was planning on cooking everything to order, you know, because that's, you know, you remember Harvest. That's how it is, like scratch cooking.
A la minute. Yeah.
Yeah. And that didn't work very well for friends and family. I'm like, we open up the next day. So I had to rework all that. Had never even made any of these sandwiches. The proteins. Yeah. Made the proteins. We had sourced the bread through Marconi already. Did a whole process of trying to find the right place to get the bread. Because I think that's kind of one of our strong points. We have really good bread. We get fresh every day. And the next day we just opened up, had never assembled any of the sandwiches, never put anything together. We never actually like, okay, here's how this is. What do you think? How's it taste? This and that. We just opened up like.
You've got a former restaurant guy sweating on the other end of this table.
We just did it. And apparently, I guess somehow or another, we did it well. You know, the first day was a mess, customer-wise, like so many people. There was no preparation. You know, I knew how to set up the line, knew how the meats were made, and everything was prepped. But the actual execution, no, we went into that totally blind.
Nice. Talk about some of the menu items, the more popular ones. I know you've got a ton of them. There was a Chicago Italian. You do riffs on all these kind of known sandwiches. So you do an Italian beef.
Yeah. So what we basically tried to do was in a way mimic, you know, an East Coast deli. I always just wanted an East Coast deli where if someone came in, you know, we got a bat behind the counter. If someone comes in, I get to hit them. That's joking. But just something just like totally raw. That's what we wanted to do. So I wanted to mimic an East Coast deli. And I think we're doing it all right. So yeah, we have a Chicago Italian beef. We have a Philly cheesesteak. That's actually, I hopefully have curved that. That was the number one seller for a long time. But you know why it was a number one seller? Two reasons. One, everybody's heard of a Philly cheesesteak. You know, vegans crave a Philly cheesesteak. So I'm like, yeah, okay, we'll do that. But it was also the first thing on the menu.
Mm-hmm. Ah.
So I'm like, oh, okay, I see what's going on here. Because people would come in and say, we're starting from the top of the menu, and they want to work their way down. I'm like, well, I'm going to switch that up. So I switch it up, and then maybe a month later.
Keep changing it.
Yeah, I just keep moving words around on the menu to confuse people and to not irritate me because I'm like, I'm so sick of making Philly cheesesteaks. I want to make something different.
Did you put hot salami at the – you do a hot salami that's a take on the joyous hot salami.
Yeah. That was, so when I introduce, like, our new stuff that I know is going to be on the menu, I kind of up it, you know, to the top and reprint menus and everything. One thing I need to bring to the top but it's actually picking up traction is the cevapi. I'm Bosnian, Croatian, Yugoslavian. It's like, how can I not do a cevapi? And our neighbors next door at Europa Market, she's Bosnian, you know, they're all Bosnian. And that was honestly the one sandwich we did research on. Cause I'm like, I do not want to mess this up.
Yeah.
Because what people up in arms coming after us, like, what are you doing? And so we brought it back and forth, using the bread that they have there. And finally, after about three trial runs, we made the cevapi happen. But that's catching on. That's kind of like our hidden gem that's just so good. The cevapi is just awesome. But yeah, like, you know, the hot salami, going back to Joya's, that's a huge seller. You know, it's a simple sandwich.
Everybody knows it. Everybody in St. Louis has had it.
Exactly. So Joya's, thank you for the idea. I appreciate it. Don't sue me like Taco Bell. But yeah, it's a simple sandwich. You know, the salami I'm making in-house for that one, we're doing a thicker cut. You know, I did a little bit of research on Joya's, how they do it. So I kind of was like, you know, flattery. I'm copying them.
I mean, it's the highest. You're right. Yeah, all right. Very high score of flattery.
So that's what I did. But yeah, It's a simple menu. We do a special about once a week.
And it's not all meats. I mean, again, meats in quotes. You do a main lobster roll.
Yeah, which is...
I thought that was going to
be the first thing that got taken off the menu. I was like, nobody's going to eat this. No one's going to want this. So, all the bread we source through Marconi over on the Hill, super happy to be, you know, partnering with them. They're just awesome. We pick it up fresh every day. So vegans don't have, you know, vegan seafood is probably one of the biggest trends coming up. Mm-hmm. And it has been for about the past year. You go to the NRA show, not the gun show, not the gun-toting people, but the other one. It's one of the biggest trends. It has been, and it still is. So without having to purchase, you know, some of the vegan, quote-unquote vegan fish that's out there, I'm like, well, what can I do? Hearts of palm and jackfruit. Okay, genius idea. So I tell myself, but I'm like, and I taste it, you know, a little bit of seaweed in there to flavor it up to make it taste fishy and everything. But, you know, we toast the lobster bun, toast and butter. So we're doing the main style. Then we put the cold lobster salad, mayo-based in there. And even people who are meat eaters come in, they're like, you know, something fresh, something... I think everything I do is simple to an extent. The execution is simple, the prep, not so much. But people come in and they're like, wow, that was just awesome. It was just like a nice, refreshing thing that had, you know, hints of like seafood in there, had a nice bite to it.
I just think it's fascinating that you can do it and get away with it and people like it. And the other one, you do a bagel and lox, vegan lox.
Yeah, that's another one of our plant forward ones.
And if you don't look too closely at the picture, it looks like lox, but it's not.
No, we're actually using carrot. It's, you know, we get our little peeler out, peel the carrot, put in brine for a 48. Well, first cook it, make sure it gets to the right, blanch it, essentially. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Make sure it gets to the right consistency of salmon. And then put it in this crazy seaweed type smoky mixture for 2 days. And then it just picks up all that flavor and the flavor is crazy.
So I'm kind of wondering who's lining up for the pizzas, who's lining up for the T-Ravs. And, you know, it used to be kind of like a subculture. Mm-hmm. And it seems like it's gone like way more mainstream. And you have people who kind of like dabble here and there. So, I mean, who are your clientele? Who's coming in?
So, you know, we have our cult following, you know, from people who have followed me for a long time. Like, even though it says Vegan Deli and Butcher, on the menu it says 100% vegan, people are still asking because I'm still using the meat names, you know, the traditional names. So hopefully people can just remember, like, oh, okay, I know what salami is. I know what ham is. I know what this is, without giving it a stupid vegan name. You know, make it just something that people are familiar with. And honestly, man, I would say our clientele is probably 40% either curious / meat eaters, 60% vegetarian, vegan. So we're getting a lot of people who are just curious and who want to try it, and they keep coming back.
Describe the place. I mean, you've got how many seats inside? And then I guess you do an insane amount of to-go business. Which is it? Which is it 50-50 or what?
Honestly, it's 50-50 because, you know, we have a tiny, tiny dining room. Right now, I think we have seats for about 18 people. We're soon going to have seats inside for give or take 26. So it's small. And then spring coming up, we're going to put some seating outside. That'll add about another 10 people. But people come in. Yeah, we have a lot of takeout business, which I thought was going to be the majority of it. It isn't. People come in, they order the food, they're like, well, we'll just wait with our food until there's somewhere to sit down and eat. And they will just stand there with a tray in hand with their food, waiting for a table to clear out. So oddly enough, I would put on the 50-50. You know, it's crazy. You know, most delis, you know, I've been to Mom's Deli a million times. You go in, you get your food, you get out, you go do your thing.
Right.
For whatever reason, people, maybe it's a great music I'm playing, sarcasm.
Yeah.
But, you know, people just want to hang out and just like talk with us and just kind of just relax there.
So you didn't want a sit down restaurant and you ended up getting a sit down
restaurant. We ended up getting a sit down restaurant. Yeah.
And will you do another sit down restaurant? Will you do this again? I'm not the first one to ask you that, certainly.
Yeah, funny story. I've had, I won't say much on this, but I've had a few people talk to me about like franchising, opening right. up other places and this and that. Do I want to do it? Probably not. I did this to keep things simple. That's kind of how I like, if I can keep my life simple and just straight to the point and easy, and I want to say not a lot of work, but I'm working 80 hours a week. So that's not simple, but my worry is if we branch out and do another one, I'm going to be working more. Yeah, there are going to be more people taking over some tasks, but will it lose its, I don't want to say magic, because we're not doing anything magical there, but to me, will it lose its magic? I think it will. I won't be there making sandwiches, which I love being there making the sandwiches for everybody. Like I said, I'm making 100% of them. I get to talk to people every day. And it's like a communal type thing. People come in there, we talk, we have homeless people come in crying, talking about their problems. We talk with them, give them a free sandwich. It's oddly enough, a community that we've built with this deli, which I think is kind of a St. Louis thing with deli.
Or the neighborhood deli. It just happens to be a vegan.
Yeah, exactly. It just happens to be vegan. And it turned into like a community type environment.
I mean, how would you describe the vegan community here? I mean, like, how would you describe the scene, the community? I mean, I know from anything I've written about, you know, vegan, vegetarian things, I mean, it just blows up. It seems like it's such a committed thing. Have you seen it evolve over the years? I mean, it seems like it's pretty tight, but bigger than I would have expected.
Yeah, the vegan community in St. Louis, you know, it's super diverse. You know, we have VegFest here. VegFest is going on
It's in October.
Yeah, when is that, the fifth year?
I think sixth year.
Sixth year. And, you know, the people that go out to that, there's so many, whether it be vegans, vegetarians, curious. And I honestly think it might even be more curious. Like VegFest might have gotten to a 50% curiosity level, and everybody who goes there seems happy. It's ever evolving, ever changing. Mm-hmm. You know, you'll see some places that last forever. You know, Brian over Terra Tacos doing a great job. 3-year anniversary, actually, this past weekend. Frida's, which isn't fully vegan anymore, but right. she's been around since the beginning of time. So I think it's evolving and it's going to be ever changing. And yeah, there's a super like loyal, committed group of vegans, vegetarians, and even, I hate this word, flexitarians. I hate that word with a passion. But you know, there are people out there who...
I'm a flexitarian.
But I like you. So you can't be. We're going to have to change your name. A flexitarian to me means you kind of eat anything and you're open to everything.
That's
so
true.
So you don't even need a term for it in a way. Like you're kind of like an anomaly. You don't even, why do you have to have a name?
It makes me sound special to myself.
Well, you are special. And I think you're special.
You're one of our most favorite fun chefs in town.
Hell
Thank
yeah.
you, Chris Bertke, for joining us.
Thank
Veganism
you.
Veganism is here to stay, and you're at the forefront of it in this town.
I sure hope so.
Thanks.
Thank you.
We'll be right back.
This episode, supported by Lohmeyer's 37th Annual Art Fair. Lohmeyer Sculpture Park invites you to shop one-of-a-kind, handmade artwork from over 150 artists at the 37th Annual Art Fair, May 10th through the 12th. Admission is $10 for ages 11 and up. While you shop, grab a bite or sip from over 20 local food and drink vendors. And don't forget to stop by the main stage for live music all weekend long. Learn more about the art fair at lohmeyer.org/artfair.
And now, back to the show.
So that brings us to today's micro rant, which concerns the vegan and vegetarian items that you see placed on standard menus. You know, the ones you can't find because they're buried with little bees and BGs next to them, and you
yes.
really have no idea
yes.
what they are.
It's like hieroglyphics or
yeah,
something.
And there's nothing
to
really to signify them except that. And I think it's time that restaurants consider adding a separate category for vegetarian and vegan items. I'm talking about the places with categories like beef and pasta and seafood and poultry. I think it's time that we see categories there so the guest can see, here's the vegan or vegetarian items. They're all lumped together And I just think in 2024, it's time that these items get equal billing. Are you with me on this or you think I'm nuts?
Yeah, well, I'm going to agree and disagree with you. I'm like, as you mentioned, I think there's a time and a place for it. I think if the restaurant already has categories, it makes perfect sense for this to happen. If, you know, it's one of those places where they just have the, you know, the very streamlined list of all of their dishes, then, you know, breaking it out probably doesn't make sense.
Right.
But so I'm with you for the most part on that. I think people want to be directed toward it. I think, like you said, equal billing. It's no longer an afterthought where someone's just going to throw you a veggie pasta,
right.
You know,
or an excuse me item. No, it's
exactly.
It's they're all legit in their own right. And I say list the most fetching item first and you might get some additional eyeballs. And you never know. People might ask a question. They might move off center and order something they may not have ordered before. And, you know, I think an added benefit for restaurants is that these are high profit items most of the time.
Sure.
So that's an added bonus. Well, we'll see if anybody listens, but I say, you know, what do you have to lose?
Right.
Right. That's a wrap. That's a vegan wrap. Thanks for listening. This is Arch Eats. See you next time. Be sure to follow us and share with your friends. And we always provide links in the show notes for everything you heard about today. And don't forget to hit that subscribe button and follow along on Instagram at St. Louis Mag. And feel free to give us a follow personally at George Mahey and Cheryl A. Bear.
If you loved what you heard, show us some love by rating and reviewing us on Apple Podcasts. And if you're hungry for even more content, you can subscribe to our dining newsletters for the freshest coverage on the local restaurant and culinary scene.
That's it for this week. Best dishes and see you next time.